pase. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, Dwayne, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Doing all the prep tonight to arrange my work and all that to watch the Eastern Conference Final to see whether Part 3 is on the way. Oh, my goodness. Could you imagine? I couldn't have imagined a few months ago. Well, I could have and I couldn't have, but we'll talk a lot more about that when I say Part 3. I think most people understand I'm referring to Toronto v. Seattle Part 3, right?
Yeah. It will be the third matchup in 4 years between Toronto FC and Seattle. We'll see if it happens. We'll see next week. But for me, well, we'll see tonight, actually. For me, how I'm feeling this morning is tired. Yeah. LAFC, Seattle, 10 p.m. starts Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific. That actually starts at like 7:20-something. Good thing we didn't have extra time, but what a game. LAFC might not have won. LAFC is always entertaining in the playoffs, and I have to say, LAFC versus either Galaxy or Seattle, anyone in the playoffs, is quite a fun game to watch.
It was a fun game to watch. 3-1, obviously, was the score there. Seattle played a brilliant game plan that was able to stifle the attack, and they took advantage of, I think, some North American refereeing mentality in the playoffs with a couple of tackles in Vila that probably should have been penalties in some cases, or at least dangerous free kicks.
The Arriaga one on Vela, the really hard shoulder tackle, and then Marufo looks at the LA players and no, all shoulder. This was all shoulder. This was good, but looking at the replay, this was an American football shoulder tackle.
Yeah, or ice hockey if you prefer. Yeah. If you're in Canada, it's like. Well, it might have been a penalty in the NHL in the modern rules because he kind of hit his head a bit. So look, you know, we talk about this to death over the years, and we'll, you know, the whole let them play mentality of refereeing in the playoffs is ridiculous and insane and not defendable and illogical and everything you want to add in there. But that's what happens, and you have to adjust your game to reflect that. So, you know, it's not that I'm saying that's why LAFC lost. I think it's frustrating that it happens, but you have to know it's going to happen. I mean,
it's on both sides too. And also, one thing that's very fascinating is the amount of video assisted refereeing or video review we've seen in the playoffs, which is what, none compared to the regular season. It's weird how that threshold becomes really high. The clear and obvious threshold becomes really rare in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a hot take on VAR. I don't think it's going to always exist, but the amount of VAR that's used in 10 years from now or 5 years from now is going to be vastly reduced from where it is at. It's going to be right down to like just a couple incidences, because I think we're quickly seeing what I've been saying all along, that it's annoying as hell and they want it out when the games are most important anyway. So
okay, you were right. Dwayne, you were right. Let's talk about LAFC. And of course, there is the easy narrative coming out of this, and we're not going to mention that narrative to Bob Bradley because he might tell us to get lost. Oh, there's the Carlos Vela narrative, of course. But let's give credit to Seattle here. Seattle started the game really well, and even though they conceded a goal at the 17th minute, Atuesta on a beautiful free kick, no one expected Atuesta to hit that free kick. Everyone expected Vela. Atuesta did, and he buried it. But Seattle really started well this game, and I have to give credit to Brian Schmetzer. I alluded to it in yesterday's show. I had a bit of hunch, had a bit of a feeling that this could come down to who's prepared enough and who has who has been tested enough during the season. And Seattle were tested. They had to fight from a hard beginning of the season. And we saw that resolve last night in Seattle, coming back from a goal down, scoring 3 unanswered goal. Rui Diaz, a pure striker, changing the entirety of the mindset for Seattle. Seattle was full measure, in my opinion, last night.
No, for sure. Like, I mean, they basically took advantages of the vulnerabilities that LAFC had there. And you know, I joke. I wasn't a joke. I absolutely stated, for something we've stated before, that Marc-Anthony Kay is maybe arguably, when you look at MVP in a literal way, most valuable player to his team, he is right up there amongst all the players in Major League Soccer because he allows them to do what they do well. That's not to say he's the most outstanding player, which is really what an MVP trophy is given to.
Yeah.
But he is certainly a player that is of vital importance to that team and what he did. And the fact that he did not start and then came on probably in a reduced role in terms of his abilities, although once he came on, that's, you know, it was only one more goal from that point. So it's yeah. it's maybe he did strengthen it up a little bit. It's hard to say. It's just LA didn't look – it's not that they didn't look good because they are good, but they didn't look the same as they looked in the summer. And it reminds me a lot of other great teams in the past 3 years, all three
Red Bulls,
of them. If you look,
NYCFC. So you're talking about the two teams from New York, obviously.
Well, no, I'm actually referring to the last two champions.
Okay.
If you look at their seasons – TFC looked amazing in the summer. When teams are looser, when teams are going through those dog days, the teams with the high talents just roll. And then people start to get this narrative about them that they're untouchable because they're rolling. If you go back to 2017, you look at TFC's record in June and July, they were scoring for hell of it, like 3-4 goals a game. I remember a game against Orlando where they were just laughing in the stands and laughing on the field, and it was 5-0 or something. It was Orlando, so, you know, grain of salt. But nonetheless, you look at Atlanta last year, same way. But once the business end goes, and if they haven't been tested, there's like this shock to the system, and it takes them a while to adjust, and they have to adjust their game plans. And I don't think LAFC did. They didn't adjust how they played. They didn't get tougher. They didn't get grittier. And instead, they got sucked into a street fight with LA Galaxy. And then I think the adrenaline and all that just sucked them into being beat by a team that knows how to win in the playoffs.
People who got into fights will get that. You know, after your fight, when your leg still shakes, your right or your left leg still shakes with the adrenaline, and you're trying to regain your composure, and you can't. This was a bit the LAFC last night after their fight with the Galaxy. This was not emotionally charged, but it was important game and tactically. And Seattle is a dangerous team to play against that is more organized than the Galaxy was, and that do have some game changers that are part of the run of play. You see Zlatan coming. He might get a half a chance and bury it, but it's not the same as having a Lodero, Rui Diaz, and supporting cast coming at your defense.
And Jordan Morris with the speed out wide.
And Brad Smith. I'm impressed by Brad Smith. I want to get back to Brad Smith in a second, but yes, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it's an experienced team, and that matters in these one-off games. And look, let's take a step back for a second here. And if you want to go into legacy stuff, yes, I took a photo of my den wall last night, which has the "We Won Blank Everything" scarf from TFC and a photo of me from the early days. And it's my TFC wall, basically. And said, if you want to have an argument with the best team ever, then I think there's something to be said about that. The team that won all three trophies, the only team to have done that, the all three trophies they could win domestically, is still, in my mind, the best team to ever play in MLS. But LAFC's legacy in terms of a great team is not tarnished by losing one game. But you do need to win a championship to be considered among the greatest teams ever. That doesn't mean they're not good. It doesn't mean that we should just throw the baby out with the bathwater here, that Bob Bradley has to start from scratch, all that stuff. In fact, I can tell you right now, they're the favorite to win the 2020 MLS Cup, right?
Yeah, unless NYCFC can continue. But yeah, those two teams are still the favorite probably for next year. But let's go back to last night. I mentioned Brad Smith. It's unfortunate that he was injured for a good part of the season. His contribution last night to a Seattle offense and that transition, what he brings in that transition, and then a big body on set pieces too, man, it's a very valuable piece for Seattle, one that's going to contribute to the continuity of success, I believe, in Seattle. I've talked yesterday with Mickey a bit, Dwayne, when there were transition, you had the Dempsey era, Lodero was there for the end of that era, transitioning. Rui Diaz now with Lodero, and you have the younger crop as well being groomed, and Jordan Morris there, big part of it. So you're having a successful franchise. The third time in 4 years, they're in MLS Cup. I think Seattle, they're doing a lot of things right without creating a lot of controversy. And I think because it's not a big name coach and it's a low profile character as a personality in Brian Schmetzer, I truly believe he doesn't get all the credit he deserved. And I mentioned it yesterday which was harder to mention yesterday than today, but I think it needs to be reassessed. Brian Schmetzer is one of the big architects of the win last night.
I think if you want to look at people's reluctance to hold Schmetzer up against the all-time greats, it's a little bit of that has to do with Ziggy and the fact that he passed recently and he was so beloved both from what he did on the field and also just as a human, that I think a lot of people feel that if they're going to hold Schmetzer up, they're kind of knocking Ziggy down because of the way he left at the end and how that allowed Seattle to break through. And that's not the case at all, of course, but human nature is of sorts of that. So I think that also this is a guy that doesn't promote himself. And as you say, Seattle, although a big market within Major League Soccer standards, is not a big market overall. Really, it's a tier two market, I would suggest, as is Toronto, for that matter, for those that think in the North American context, even though it's big physically. It doesn't get the play that an LA or New York does, right, in terms of mainstream stuff. So people, I think that matters. Like the El Tráfico is not the best rivalry in Major League Soccer, but if you listen to anyone talking about it, it is, because it's in LA, and it matters a little bit more because of that. And I think Seattle, because they're up there in the Northwest, that they're sort of just doing what they do every year consistently. So they're never surprising. That's another factor there too. You know, they're down for them. Seattle's like, you know, most teams have like ebbs and flows, right? In MLS, they have like, you know, the dark ages. Seattle's dark ages was the start of 2016.
And they finished that year winning MLS Cup. So
yeah, it's like 4 months in 2016 when they couldn't quite figure it out and looked like maybe they were taking a regression. And then they
changed, you know, coach. Changed coach. Garth Lagaway just came in the offseason. And I remember I was at MLS Cup that year. You're right. So that being said, Seattle is full credit. Now let's move to LAFC. Let's go to the easy narrative, to the intangibles that I usually don't like to talk about because it's not like we can quantify them. Are they replicable? Is it just pure luck or I would say probabilities happening in front of our eyes? But Carlos Vela and the big games. Carlos Vela not performing, and I don't like to say performing. That's why the quotes, if you're looking at us on video, air quotes, if you're listening to us on podcast, it is, for me, the easy narrative saying he doesn't perform. There were still moments in this game where he was a game breaker. He created that opportunity for LAFC's goal with the foul at the 78th minute just outside of the box around the 21-yard mark. So he created that chance. And the amount of time where he was attacked by three players of Sounders, still getting the ball, being tackled on the floor, getting up, still controlling the ball, he performed well. But the easy narrative that in big games, his team doesn't win, is still there, Dwayne.
Yeah, and look at his career as a whole. No one is doubting his talent. Obviously, he's a very talented, dynamic, creative player that has demonstrated an ability to produce offense at a rate that has only been matched, if at all, by one or two players in Major League Soccer history. But if you look at his overall resume prior to Major League Soccer, although good, it is not at the same level as some of those other players that we've talked about. Ibra was right. You know, when he was in the Premier League, he was not really that well known, to be honest. He was known. He was a player that was expected that he produced, but he never really fought through and established himself as a guy that you couldn't lose, that, you know, absolutely demanded to be, you know, at the level he was or above. Right? Probably, I have trouble placing his team nowadays, but that's an historical conversation for a Tuesday in the future. He's a very, very good player, but is he a player that will change and evolve and grab a team and carry them? Certainly through dog days, as I said a minute ago, and that's a different sort of context, but when he's getting slashed and kicked and it matters. And this, you know, happens in Major League Soccer playoffs. It happens in the Premier League, you know, when you're playing another Big Six team. Can he fight through that? Can he make an impact through that? That's a different question. Can he take Mexico to a different level? That's a different question. And, you know, we don't really have answers yet. Although, as I said, he's only 30. And in Major League Soccer characteristics, that's not that old. He has a couple more years left where he absolutely can prove us wrong. I don't think I'm saying he can't. So he's not proving anything, but he can prove doubters wrong and can do this. But in terms of last night, did he fight through the shoulder checks? Did he fight through the kicks? I imagine he's pretty bruised this morning. Well, Seattle did a little bit better, and that speaks to, again, the experience they've had going to a final 3 or 4 years now.
And you can see that experience looking at Seattle play in the game. Of course, the gamesmanship late in the game, Rui Diaz staying on the field and Lodeiro, and it's all part of the game, especially the South American game, but it does create a certain amount of experience and game management, and I kind of figured that game management would be an influencer in this game, and it was. When you look at Marc-Anthony Kaye's coming into, maybe who wasn't fit for 90 minutes, but you don't have the same rhythm, and to truly do effectively what Marc-Anthony Kaye does, you kind of need that rhythm at the beginning of the game to get into the rhythm and the habit of intercepting, stopping, creating the momentum, moving the flow. So what he does best, it was hard for him to do so. So I truly believe Seattle won that game. But for LAFC, it's another missed opportunity of a result in the playoffs. Anything
it's 2 years,
though. I know, it's 2 years. That's the thing. It's 2 years. They got the supporters' shield. They got the best season in Major League Soccer regular season history. And it'll stay like that until next year. It's just another chapter. The story will still be written. The book ain't over yet. It's just the second chapter. And it's not a bad chapter at all. But for Seattle, experience. You know, those intangibles and one-off games, we're seeing the intangibles pay off for Seattle. But tonight might be a different story. And if you don't have anything else to add on Seattle and LA, Dwayne, I think we have time for a little break.
Well, just sure, quick. It took Seattle 7 years to win MLS Cup.
Yeah.
Even though they were always right there. So, I mean, it's hard to win. So I don't think LAFC, there's anything proven defective about them by the fact that they somehow haven't managed to win MLS Cup within 24 months. God forbid, right?
Exactly. Atlanta did, though, but that's why probably LA is having the bar really high, because they're a big, flashy expansion team that came after the big, flashy expansion team. So they have a blueprint, and they're a year behind now. But on that note, we'll take a quick break, come back, and talk about Atlanta United and TFC.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/ Sports Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. If you're watching us live on Twitter, make sure you click that follow button. You're watching us on YouTube, make sure you click that subscribe button right here underneath the SPN logo. Tonight, TFC will travel, well, they already traveled to Atlanta to face Atlanta United. And if you want to know more about Canadian soccer, first of all, make sure you go to our Patreon page, where Dwayne and I had Coach Dino Morley yesterday, coach of the Cape Breton Capers, who are getting ready for next week's semifinals of the Atlantic University Sports Championships. You can listen to that on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast for $2 a month, where Dwayne and I go deep in Canadian soccer. But tonight, for Canadian soccer, maybe a third trip to Major League Soccer's most popular game, MLS Cup, for Toronto FC, or a second trip in consecutive years for Atlanta is on the line tonight.
Least I be accused of being Toronto-centric, I will say that it is a big night for Canadian soccer fans who happen to also support Toronto FC. So say that, although I'm sure it'll be a night that interests a lot of Canadian soccer fans, regardless of who they support, because hate watching is a thing. But this is a game that I know you didn't think they'd be in, for sure. And I would have given them maybe a 5 or 10% chance of being in about 5 months ago. But you know, they started to turn things around in August, and they got the wing support in, the wide, the width that Vanny had been long begging for. And even though he didn't always play them, which confused people after they got them in, something changed. There was a confidence change that happened within TFC. And I think adding Omar Gonzalez was actually the bigger piece back then. And suddenly, when you look heading into the playoffs, TFC suddenly has the third best points per game of any team over the last 10 games of any team in the playoffs. And you have to start thinking of them as a top four team. And here they are in the top four. Is this the cap for them? It might be. Atlanta is very good, as we know. They're at home. So I would say Atlanta is a deserved favorite in this. But NYCFC was a deserved favorite in this. And Toronto FC is playing very loose right now. They are, you know, playing with house money, so to speak. I don't think anyone could argue that this is not going to be a success. This hasn't been a successful season because this is a league. This is a part of the world where we look not at the whole, but we look at the end when it comes to evaluating teams. And TFC is in the Final Four. It's a successful season.
Now, let's talk about tonight. Let's not necessarily look at what could this mean for Toronto FC or for Atlanta. We can do that tomorrow. Let's look at the matchups tonight. Of course, let's go straight to the point, the Jozy Altidor point. He was not in Atlanta yesterday. Apparently, he's arriving in Atlanta today. Apparently, he had an MRI yesterday. So all those are allegedly, we don't know. It's people on Twitter, different sources. But apparently, he had an MRI with his personal physician. So what does that tell you, Dwayne?
Yeah, well, Gareth Wheeler was the person who reported the MRI with the personal physician. And Gareth does have an affiliation with the club. You know, one sort of arm's length, but he's still there. So I would trust that that's probably truth. Now, whether or not that means he's playing tonight or whether that's just more decoy wish, like who the hell knows? It's playoffs. We're never going to know until the game time. Most people are evaluating this game and talking about this game as if he's not playing. That suggests to me that most people share my opinion that Jozy is, he's like, you know, a decoy, as I said, that they're going to keep trotting around, keep planting the seed in Atlanta's head that he might have to play so that they have to prepare a game plan with the idea that the big man might be in there. So, you know, does it matter at this point, though? That's the other question. But yeah, Jozy, if he plays and he's healthy, which are two big ifs, does suddenly take this maybe 60-40 breakdown into a 52-48 kind of thing, because he does have the ability and the history in Atlanta to score and to score in big goals and big goals in big moments. And then we talked about Seattle a lot in the last block. Toronto, you know, Atlanta did it last year. Toronto has done it just as much. And in fact, arguably, I don't think there's any arguably, but they have done more of it than Atlanta since they did it in 2016. They did it in 2017. They did it in 2018 in the beginning of the season too. So this is just a continuation of that. And Jozy would be a massive part of that as if he is as well as he was back then. The question I have, and
yeah, it's going to be my next question. It's going to be my next question.
Okay, you go ahead, ask it.
Will Omar Gonzalez be playing tonight?
Well, that actually, well, I'll come back to what I was going to ask you. But okay. Yeah, Omar Gonzalez, different. I think, okay, is far more likely.
Yeah, I think so too.
But at the same time, there is a question, and this sort of speaks to what I was going to say, is that Toronto FC, it seems silly to suggest it, but if Omar Gonzalez and Jozy Altidor are 80%, Toronto FC's won two playoff games without them. Are they better off with an 80% Jozy and 80% Omar? Now, I think there's more argument to be made they're better off with an 80% Omar than they are with an 80% Jozy, because Jozy could always come off the bench or something. But they've been winning with what they've been doing. They've changed the formation. Yeah. They've figured out a way that works with them. They have that false nine with Pozuelo, who's playing as well as he did when he first came back in the league, as well as he did in the last stages in Belgium.
I think it's
for the first time in a while.
Because he finally had a little break or something. He came literally straight from, since last fall, he had nonstop soccer, right? So you do hit a wall during the season. I think that's what happened with Pozuelo. For Omar Gonzalez, I kind of hope for TFC's sake that he does play. And here's my thinking. And this, because friend of the show, Tristan Amour, a colleague in Montreal, journalist, writes for Pro Soccer USA, him and I had this conversation many times this year, Dwayne. Laurent Simon will save you oftentimes a lot. And you'll create oftentimes one big save or big moment that he'll save in a game as a defender. But also, and usually he has one big mistake a game too that usually leads to a goal or to a big chance. So far, he didn't make that mistake. But it can happen. And the more it doesn't happen, he's due. And maybe that mistake could be tonight. Maybe not. And I hope for TFC that it doesn't. Or hopefully Omar Gonzalez is healthy enough to play for TFC. But it does always have a potential risk factor. When Laurent Simon is your starting center back, he's going to be great. He's going to have a great high in the game, but also could create a disturbing moment.
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, he's been scary at times, and his foot speed is not very good. I don't really see him making big mistakes as much as him getting beat on the pace lately. I mean, you know, when he won Defender of the Year, he was what? Was that 5 years ago or 4 years ago?
2015. Laurent Simon, 2015 Defender of the Year.
So that's almost five seasons from now, right? Like, we're at the end of 2019, so it's almost 5 years. And that's in a player's lifespan, a huge amount of time. He probably just was 10 or 15% faster. He's never been a fast man. Now he's slow, right? And that he has to do different things now to make that work. I've heard some people, there's an interesting suggestion out there that I've heard that to deal with the Atlanta's attack, that one thing Toronto may do tactically is to actually go back to the wingback situation and play five at the back with sort of a looser wingback. So basically you put some on in there with Omar in the middle and Mavinga to his other side, and then you play with your two fullbacks playing a little deeper than they would normally. So they're more fullbacks than they are wingbacks.
Using a Larea and who else?
Probably Morrell. But
okay. That could make sense. That could be possible for tonight.
Yeah, I tend to think – here's the thing. Greg Vanney has, in big games, shown a willingness to be experimental. So when you're trying to talk about the tactics that Toronto is going to roll out, I think you have to consider that you look at MLS Cup 2017, for instance. They were famous that year for playing with three at the back with wingbacks all year. That's what they did. They became synonymous with it. They were like the Dutch, for God's sakes, in their system. Total football. Then in the final, they roll out a diamond midfield for the first time in months in the biggest game of the year. And that's Greg Vanney in a nutshell. And it's – look, I know there were times this year when we had very conversations on the show about Greg Vanney, or Vanney out, basically. And, you know, me saying I've always been a little more reluctant than most to go that route. But I was even edging towards that maybe we have to think about this. Hell no now. This has been Greg Vanney's best month in his entire coaching career. Yeah. So – we'll see what happens tonight, but don't be surprised if it's something that you didn't think of.
It's interesting, too, because it all started as well with the Canadian Championship and the loss of Toronto FC to Montreal in the Canadian Championship final, and how Greg Vanney answers those questions and how he moved on from that defeat that did sting. Toronto did have eyes on next year's Champions League. They always do. But this time around, they were looking at the playoffs, too, and the possibility they do have now. We'll see. On Atlanta's side, the question is, can Toronto's backline stop Josef Martinez? And Atlanta has been really good. Of course, there's banged up, there's injuries. Of course, famously, Michael Parkhurst. But when you look at Atlanta also, they have been successful without two players that can be important for this team, but haven't stepped up yet. Talking about Ezequiel Barco, of course, and P.T. Martinez. P.T. Martinez has been on the bench lately. But can those two players be the X factor for Atlanta tonight?
Well, P.T. Martinez, of course, started the last game, surprising most people. Got this term that I hate that has become part of the lexicon of MLS coverage lately is game-winning assist, which... anyway, he got an assist on the game-winning goal. This is the thing that I keep hearing now. I think it has something to do with Pulisic. But anyway, it's okay. I'm getting a little too Canadian now. Backing off. No, can he have an impact? Yeah, obviously, he was a huge player. He's also a moody player. But he's a player that, if you look at his career in South America before he came, that his biggest performances were in the biggest games. So that's perhaps why De Boer played him in the playoff game last time, and why I suspect he'll play now. Atlanta's got a lot of talent, though, and they really do across the board. Their only vulnerability right now, as you mentioned, Parkhurst a minute ago, his injury. He was training today, but it's hard to see how you're going to play after blowing your shoulder out.
Yeah,
I guess he does nothing else to play for. It'll be his final game of his career whenever it ends, right? So
him and Raimondo both will see each other in, I guess, somewhere in a clinic that is private, that is not in the team infirmary, because both of them messed up their shoulder. Raimondo was in his last game in a defeat against Seattle last week. But, of course, Parkhurst was in the first game and the first half of Atlanta's playoff this year. But tonight, yeah. Atlanta at home. Atlanta did suffer a famous loss in the playoff to Toronto 2 years ago. But last year went all the way. They learned how to lose. They won. In year three, what happens? What happens after you learn to win in the playoffs? How do you feel? How do you see this unfold tonight on Atlanta's side?
Yeah, just for clarification, Atlanta played Columbus in the playoffs 2 years ago, not Toronto.
Yes, Columbus.
Toronto went on to beat Columbus in the final. But
that's where I got confused.
Yeah, it's fine. They played famously in the final game of the season in 2016 or 2017, pardon me, and they knocked them down pretty good on that game and sort of laid a claim to being the favorite for sure, because a lot of people were talking about Atlanta at that point. So there has been a lot of conversation about that. But what do I think about tonight? Look, I think I said 60-40 a minute ago. That's a pretty standard level that you'd put on an away performance. And I'm going to stick with that. I think TFC will need to play as well as they played, obviously, in the last two games and you know, defend very well tonight against Martinez to win this game. But I give them as much of a chance to win this game as I would them win any game. So this is not – so that's listen to carefully what I'm saying. Like, this is not a special game for TFC to win. They don't have to go above and beyond. They just have to play their game. And, you know, hope Atlanta doesn't have some, you know, performance of the ages. And they have as much a chance as they would at any other time going in. But it is still, ultimately, there's a reason that Atlanta is hosting this game. They were the more consistent team throughout the season. They earned the right to host it. They deserve to host it. And because of that, they are the slight favorite. If this was in Toronto, I would go the opposite on this. And I would say Toronto is the slight favorite. They are very close, I think. This is a much closer game than last night. And we saw the upset last night. Yeah. So,
yesterday, when I had my thinking about last night's game, Dwayne, I was thinking about the coaches, and I had the feeling that Branch Metzer versus Bob Bradley and their decision and their tactics and how they would react through the game management phase of the game would dictate the result of the game. I wasn't too far. I was actually pretty damn close. When we're looking at tonight, I'm looking at the goalkeepers in net. They're both good. They both had great postseason, but Quentin Westberg has been lights out for Toronto. I have to say Stephen Fry last night too. And it's a bit of a theme of these playoffs. Good goalkeeper will get you through the one game. Winner continues, losers goes home. Just talk to Tyler Miller in LAFC. Yeah, he'll talk to you about it for a little while before he stops and goes back to get more Kleenex because he's still out of the playoffs. But for tonight, I think it's going to be Q. I think Westberg might be the difference. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Brad Guzan giving a bad goal and giving Toronto an advantage on the road. And the panic of having the opponent leading at home will get to Atlanta, and Toronto will win 1-0 tonight.
Well, there you go. That's the Montreal guy saying that. Look, I'll give the same evaluation that I did to the NYCFC game. I think for TFC on the road, they need to go out and punch them in the lip early. And if they taste that little bit of blood, Atlanta has an inclination with the makeup of that team and sort of their history, and there's a lot of evidence of this, that they have it in them to completely lose their mind and completely unravel, and that's a possibility. So if you're TFC, I think you have to go out early and you have to get on the front foot right away. You can't sit there and let them dictate play and let the crowd get roaring into that and let them, you know, start coming at you in waves right from the start. You have to go out and you dictate the game yourself in the early parts of this game to not let them get any rhythm going. They will have their moments. Atlanta will. So if you can get yourself a buffer early, then it's a lot easier to sustain and to defend those moments. I give Toronto a chance for sure. In fact, if you want me to give you a number, I will do so. I think we're going to see penalties again. And you can judge all that you want. So obviously I'm leaning Atlanta.
Bradley not kicking a penalty this time.
Yeah, so I'm going to go 1-1.
1-1 for Dwayne, 1-0 for my prediction. On that note, make sure you follow us on Twitter to get our live reaction tonight while we're watching TFC in Atlanta. You can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and this show at Soccer Today SPN. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific to talk about tonight's game, to review it, and to talk about where do we go from here and MLS Cup that will happen the week after on November 10th. Until tomorrow, as always, if you want to hear more about Canadian soccer and Canadian soccer only, for now, go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, where Dwayne and I recently interviewed Coach Dino Morley of the Cape Breton Capers, the last two-time finalists of the U Sports National Championship for Men's Soccer. Won in 2017. They were the finalists last year, and they're already qualified for a semifinal berth in the championship of the AUS in the Atlantic provinces. Get that show and more at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. And we'll be back tomorrow. And until then, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.